It is 5 o'clock in Salford in the northwest of the UK. How you doing? It is the 15th of February 2021, Monday's programme. It is me, Richie Allen. Welcome to it. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you've had a good day. Dr. Vernon Coleman is my guest. He'll be with me a little bit later on. Before that, though, we're going to round up the day's news. Lots of very interesting things going on, as there always is. Do tweet the programme. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. I look forward to hearing from you today.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, Dr. Vernon Coleman. Do check out vernoncoleman.com if you haven't done that before. Monday, how was your weekend? Was it good? Was it restful? Mine was. I had a nice weekend. I don't mind telling you. I enjoyed Sunday Morning Melodies again yesterday. And that's kind of gathering a little bit of pace. People are discovering it all the time. That's good, by the way. Do join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. UK time for a couple of hours of old, sometimes very old, tunes and some chat. I will put a piece on the website about it to give it a bit more publicity. But thanks for joining me yesterday morning. I do like it. I do love it, in fact, and I look forward to continuing it. Hi to Keely in London. How you doing, Keely? She says at the very beginning, would you say hi to Gail Scotland? That's Gail in Scotland, who is miserable today with everything that's going on. Give her a shout to cheer her up. Both of us tune in most days. Thanks, Keely, and hi to Gail in Scotland. Cheer up, Gail. You have these days, don't you? And I did say today to a couple of people that I am in contact with, things seem to be accelerating, but maybe that'll work to our advantage in the long run. So don't be despondent. Not yet. Don't give up, Gail. Don't give up. I tell you what, it felt balmy this morning, didn't it? After the cold weather, beast from the east too, that we've been subjected to for the last couple of weeks. It felt balmy. It reminded of my days on the Mediterranean this morning. I could have went out stripped down to me underpants. It was so nice. It really was nice when I walked out. Could have given the local housewives a cheap thrill. And it would have been a thrill. Do you hear me? It'd be better than that Diet Coke ad, that old Diet Coke ad. The local women every morning waiting for the BBG to walk out in his underpants. And I'm buff, by the way. I am buff. Go out of that, Bully. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is more buff than you. She is indeed. Lovely morning it was. And temperatures of 15 to 16 degrees promised for Salford and the Northwest this coming weekend. What will we do? Temperatures 15, 16 this coming weekend. I know. It's got to be climate change. It must be. That Piers Corbyn is some lying bastard, isn't he? How could it be 16 in the middle of February? Well, it's just the way it is. So, yeah, we will be subjected to a bit of heat this weekend. Might head off to the beach, might not. We'll see how it goes. Maybe a bit early for the beach. Maybe a bit early for the beach. Now, I've been busy today with the Richie Allen website, richieallen.co.uk. richieallen.co.uk. Do check it out if you haven't before. I wrote several articles today for the website. Some of them are good, some of them are bad, some of them are terrible. Check them out anyway and have your say. This, well, did you see this? The DVLA. Now, for our listeners overseas, that's the Driver and Vehicle Licensing Agency. If you want a driving license, you've got to go down there and bribe some Welsh guy in Swansea. No, you don't. No, you don't. You apply for your provisional and then you drive around on that for a while, even though you're not supposed to. And then you take the test. And if you're like me, a stone-cold genius, you pass it first time. And if you're like other people I know, it takes 5 or 6 times to pass it. But anyway, the DVLA is based in Swansea. And it was reported by the Daily Mirror today, and I double-checked it, and it's true, that the DVLA asked its own staff to tell them their waist size. What's your waist size there, Taffy? All part of the decision-making process when it comes to returning to work. So they want to get their staff back into the office, right, after COVID is gone. But they want to keep people safe. So they've been asking people to divulge their waistline number. What's your number? What's yours, dear listener? I'm a 32. I know, it's astonishing. 6'6" and eyes of blue. Richie Allen's waist size is 32. My eyes are green. 32. It's astonishing. The guy who used to be 17 and a half stone is now 13 stone 12. 32. Buff. Gorgeous. Delicious. None of the above. None of the above. Anyway, the DVLA sent a circular around to its staff saying, how big are you? How big is he? How big is he? And the idea is, it's all part of a points-based system to see who can come back to work and who can't come back to work. If you're a little bit on the rotund side of things, a bit chubby, you won't be coming back to work. Because if you're a bit overweight, you being overweight are more susceptible to viral infections. And as you are a bit overweight and more susceptible to viral infections, you might then give a viral infection to somebody else, somebody who's slim and who takes care of their body, you fat bastard. That's the way it is. I'm not exaggerating this, by the way. Go to my website, richieallen.co.uk. Basically, the DVLA is telling some of its staff, you're a bit too fat to come back to work there, David. Mefanwi. What's your body mass index? You're going to have phone calls like that. Morning, Mefanwi. You're still at home, I see. I am. I want to come back to work, though. What's your BMI? It's 30. You're not coming back until you lose some weight. Mentioned on the website today, Charlie Brooker, the creator of Black Mirror, must be laughing his arse off watching all of this unfold. I wish I'd thought of that, Charlie might be saying. That's the future now, you see, allowing employers to giving them the power to insist that you make some lifestyle changes to make you more healthy in order to be allowed access your desk at work. Unbelievable. Being overweight puts others at risk. It's crazy, right? And of course, if you roll that out to its inevitable conclusion, you want to book something, could be anything, a dinner, film, theatre, could be a theatre there. The computer, because everything you do now, when you book anything, it's all online. You go to try and book the latest, I don't know, who's big these days, who, Jessica Chastain, she's big, I don't know, help me out here. Want to see the new Jessica Chastain flick. She's nice for a ginger, by the way. And, you know, Jessica Chastain, yeah, lovely. The computer, without you realising it, checks your BMI, your body mass index, which is determined by doing a calculation connected to your height, your weight and your age. And you go and try and book, and the computer says no. The computer says no. You can't. You're not coming in. You're not coming in. Your name's not on the door. And I noticed today, I don't run or control the Richie Allen Facebook page. I have a passport for it, but I don't look after it. Rog looks after it mostly. And I had a look today at the page managing side of things, because Rog said, look at what Facebook is telling you. And I did put an article on richieallen.co.uk about this. Facebook has been telling me all day, and apparently over the weekend, that the visibility of the page has been reduced because I posted false news there. False news now. Not fake news. False news. No, I haven't, of course. But what difference does it make, right? And for posting false news, Facebook says people will be told that you have a history of sharing false news. Because Facebook now is the arbiter of what's true and what isn't true. Facebook tells me, we've got multiple fact checkers sifting through the posts to determine what should and shouldn't be seen. Are these real people? I think they are. Is it artificial intelligence? Maybe not. I think it's real people. Somebody posted something on Twitter today, somebody who works in tech, to say that he or she had been invited to apply for a position as a Facebook fact checker. Yeah, this is really going on, this stuff. I posted an article on Facebook yesterday claiming that AstraZeneca was recruiting 5-year-olds to test a new vaccine. They are. They're openly saying, we want to give a vaccine to children. It's a brand new one now. Children are not susceptible to coronavirus, but we want to give them a vaccine. Why do you want to do that? Well, says AstraZeneca, we believe if we give it to them, that years and years and years and years later, if they get coronavirus, they won't have it so bad. Five-year-olds. I said on my website yesterday, if you have a child and you allow a child to have a vaccine as part of a trial, you really need to have a good look at yourself in the mirror. Maybe it is child abuse, maybe. What do you think? So anyway, I got the same notification that the fact checkers had declared it to be false news, even though it isn't. I just basically reported on AstraZeneca's own vaccine trial, but it's fake, false news, says Facebook, so it's gone. Dr. Vernon Coleman, trawling the mainstream media, updating us daily almost on reports of injuries and deaths, and Vernon is getting this information from lots of mainstream media sources. He's diligent in his research. He's a proper journalist, old school, right? So he is. And what do? I repost that on my website. Facebook says false news. False news. People are not getting sick because of the feckin' vaccine, but they are. Now look, you know I don't care about Facebook, and you know I don't care about... It's not about the Richie Allen Show, so don't think it is. When Facebook shuts down the page, I'll be glad. Roger will be glad. We don't care. He only kept it open because people were asking me not to close it down. It's rubbish. I've no time for it. But this is what's coming for everybody. For you and for me and for all of our friends. Listen, it's 12 minutes past 5 or 11 and a half minutes past 5. I've loads to tell you. I've a massive amount of content to get through between now and 6 o'clock before Vernon Coleman joins us. One or two things that might make you chuckle as well. I'm not sure. They might make you chuckle. They might not make you chuckle. They might make you retch. They might make you barf. I don't know. But it's Monday anyway, and it's time to crack on with the Richie Allen Radio Show. Because I am the BBG. This is live from Salford in the northwest of the UK, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. And this is AC/DC. You Shook Me All Night Long. DC, You Shook Me All Night Long on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Lovely tweet from James and George, who are listening to this live on a road trip through Spain. They're just about to camp out for the night, listening to the show whilst watching the sunset. George and James in Spain on road trip. How you doing, lads? Thanks very much. Hi to Ricky Emmett, who's got a 34-inch waist. Thanks, Ricky. Good man. What's your BMI though, Ricky? That's what I'm interested in, son. Your body mass index, old pal. That's all that interests me. Debs says, DVLA, wait for the truckers to get cold on their waist size. No more greasy breakfast for them. What if you're on steroids or have a disability, says Debs. There you are, Debs. Ida Faisala says, too young to die, too fat to work at the DVLA. Cheers, Faisal, for that. And hi to John Rorty. How you doing, John? Wouldn't the return to work related body mass index be associated with fat shaming? Asks John. Interesting how corporations will interpret the difference. Yes, John. Good man. You're 100% right there. Thanks to Charlie Stevenson for sharing an article from The Guardian. Thanks, Charlie. I've just retweeted it, old son, old pal. And The Sixth on Twitter says, Richie, just watching Lethal Injection 2. By Clint Richardson. What an eye-opener. Haven't seen it myself, mate, but thanks for the tip. I'll check it out, so I will. Hi to Alan in Liverpool. Patricia tweets, giving COVID vaccines to young children? Why don't these vaccine creeps just admit that it doesn't have anything to do with health? It's all about the money, says Patricia. Amen, Patricia. And it isn't just five-year-olds, because when I posted that article on the website yesterday, Dr. Vernon Coleman immediately got in touch with me to send me evidence that they want to trial these vaccines on 6-month-old babies. Yeah, they sure do. Hi to Liz Bentley. How you doing, Liz? Keep the tweets coming in at BBG Richie. Let's move right on. Lots to talk about, including this. Let's get into it now. Sky News correspondent Mark Stone is in Tel Aviv today reporting from there back to the Sky News studio, on the Israeli vaccine rollout. Israel offered the jab to everyone over 16 at the beginning of February. So only a couple of weeks back, Israel said, right, anybody over 16, your time for the jab. However, a lot of people over 16 have refused, and the uptake has dropped significantly. Younger people don't seem to want the jab. Now, the country's health minister has As a result of this, the health minister has proposed that the unvaccinated be excluded from museums, from cinemas, from shops and from cafes. Here's the tail end of Mark Stone's report from Tel Aviv today.
Uli Edelstein is proposing, and I think this is something that may well get through the parliament here, is that anyone who hasn't had a vaccine, two doses of the vaccine, won't be allowed to go to restaurants, bars, shopping malls, gyms. They will just be banned from entry. And it will be incumbent, Adam, on the citizen to prove that they've had a vaccine. That, they think, is the only way they're going to be able to reopen the country. But as the doctor just outlined there, if they're not able to get enough young people into the vaccination centres, then the problem they're going to have is that 90% level that they need the country to be vaccinated, 90% of the country vaccinated. If they haven't got it that high, then it's going to be very, very difficult for the country to reopen.
Yulia Edelstein, the Israeli health minister. I mean, wow, right? Wow. Wow. I mean, don't put any gloss on that whatsoever. Just say it as you mean it. You don't have the vaccine, you don't have a social life anymore. Now, it seems the UK government cannot make its mind up on whether it's ready to admit that they've planned the same for me and for you in the UK. Listen to Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab on LBC Radio yesterday with Tom Swarbrick.
Back on the vaccine passports. Clearly, this is something that's going to have to be agreed internationally, which the government is now making signs that it's looking at. What's, though, to stop a company in this country demanding that in order to enter a restaurant or in order to go into a pub in the future, that someone produce a document saying that they've got a vaccine?
Well, in terms of the law that would apply, that's something that's the prerogative of the government and parliament. But what we want to do is make sure that there's enough confidence in the national rollout that when we're in a position to open non-essential retail and in due course after that, hospitality, people can do so confidently. The modalities and the mechanisms, that all needs to be worked out. And the Prime Minister, I said, will give a clearer sense of the direction of travel.
So domestically, it won't be needed, you don't think? A domestic vaccine passport where you have to show a bit of paper to go into a supermarket or something like that?
Well, it's something that hasn't been ruled out and it's under consideration, but of course you've got to make it workable. And you've got to, I think the thing with when I've looked at this, whether it's on the international, domestic or the local level, you've got to know that the document that is being presented is something that you can rely on, that it has an accurate reflection of the status of the individual. So I'm not sure there's a foolproof answer in the way that sometimes it's presented, but of course we'll look at all the options.
Okay. Somebody is lying. It's something that's under consideration. It hasn't been ruled out, said the Foreign Secretary yesterday. He's all for it, just not sure. He's not sure that the tech is ready, that it's in place, right? Astonishing, yeah, overused word maybe. He's happy with it. He's happy with the idea that, no, you might say he didn't say he's happy. He didn't say he's unhappy. He said it hasn't been ruled out, it's under consideration. He didn't spit on the suggestion. He didn't say, no man, my God, we're not going to impose such a tyranny on the people of the UK that you can't go out, basically, unless you've had a vaccine. Right? Under consideration, he said. That was LBC yesterday. On LBC this morning, same station, different presenter, Nick Ferrari. On with him was the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. Ferrari said, so Dominic Raab said domestic passports are under consideration. You're saying they're not in the plan. So who's telling the truth, Health Secretary?
Well, let me set out the situation exactly as it is, which is that there are some countries around the world who are saying that in order to travel there in the future, not now, in the future, you'll have to show that you have been vaccinated. So we want to make sure that Brits can do that. And therefore can show their vaccination status in a vaccine certificate.
He's blaming countries overseas for this. All we want to do is make sure that Brits are okay to travel. That's all we want to do. You know, other countries are bringing this in, so all we want to do is make sure that the Brits are okay. That's why we're thinking about the passports.
Of some kind, in order to do that sort of travel. We haven't got any plans for the introduction of this domestically, but we are, of course, working with international partners because having those standards of what, you know, to prove that you've been vaccinated, if a country decides that you've got to have been vaccinated to go there, that's obviously it's important that we have, the Brits have access to that as well.
He's lying. We have no plans for vaccine passports. He's lying. We wouldn't do that to you. He's lying. Jimmy Nail. Why, aye, man. Jimmy Nail. Tory MP Stephen Hammond on Julia Hartley Brewer's talk radio show this morning. Well, he said, look, forget the government. The private sector will see this as a reality. Domestic vaccine passports will happen.
I think it's going to happen, not whether the government regulates it or not. I think simply getting back to normal life. If you're a pub-owning group and you say, actually, to get more people in my pub, I want you to prove you've had that vaccine because other people won't come unless we can prove that. I think it's just going to happen. I don't think it's a matter of the government. I think market forces will be so strong that people will need to show that they've had that vaccine. And so you can say, I don't want the vaccine, but it may restrict what you're going to do. I don't think it's a question of the government regulating it at all. I just think, you know, airlines will say, well, if you want to come on my plane, and that's their choice, as much as it's your choice to go anywhere, you need to show something. If you want to come into my pub, you need to show something.
You don't think that those publicans will be desperate to get customers back in? I mean, given that, you know... I mean, what about the case where we've got a situation where people over 70 or even, you know, my group, I'm in the group 9, so I'll be vaccinated before my husband, who's 48. So I can go to the pub with my vaccine passport, but he can't. It's not his fault. He's 4 years younger, but he doesn't. No. What about the people in their 20s who've basically sacrificed their whole year of their life to keep the over 70s safe? The over 70s could be sitting in a pub and the under 20s can't. Does that seem reasonable?
No, it doesn't. But there are lots of things that aren't reasonable. And I think the key thing then is to roll out the vaccine. The trouble is, I don't see how you stop it. Do we say to everybody,
yes,
until everybody's vaccinated, you can't have anything opening? And so some people may say, I'm not going to open things. I'm just saying, I think the market forces will dictate this. I think it's just going to happen.
Again, the government can say, no, you cannot make that requirement. It's totally within the power of the government.
Very naive, Julia Hartley Brewer, isn't she? It's within the powers of the government to stop the private sector imposing such a tyranny. Yes, Julia, if you believe that the government is making these decisions, if you are still stupid enough to believe that Matt Hancock and Boris Johnson are running the country, and Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, and the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, if you actually believe that these fuckers are making decisions and deciding on policies, well, you're crazy, right? You must know that now. These are yes men and women. They're front men and women for this agenda. None of this is the doing of Boris Johnson or Matt Hancock. Come on, wake up and smell the coffee, right? Right. How naive do you have to be, still labouring under the misapprehension that the government is running the show? Give me a break. Give me a break, I said. I need a break, God damn it. It's only the middle of February. My God. Chris Clough says, Richie, why do they all have annoying radio voices? Maybe it's just me. Well, Chris, maybe I have an annoying radio voice. Maybe I do. I've had that said to me before. Your voice goes through me, Baldy. Doesn't really. There you are. That'll teach you. That's subjective. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I would have said. I know I'm perfect. Really? Not really. Hi to Martin Brennan. Now, apparently, Panorama is a BBC flagship documentary programme. It airs infrequently, doesn't it? Does it have seasons? Infrequently, regularly, I don't know. It will be on again this evening on BBC One at 7:35. I do believe it's about misinformation, and Professor Dolores Cahill, who has been on this programme before, has agreed to take part. Now, my understanding about Panorama is that the programme is recorded, edited, and then put out whenever the BBC chooses to put it out. I'm not sure it's live, so I'd be very worried now about how the BBC chooses to portray Professor Dolores Cahill. Mark, I would be worried. If I was Dolores, who I think is a very bright and a very articulate and a very nice woman, I'd be concerned about the editing, but that's just me. Mark Nixon says, BBG, you would think that the zeal with which they want everyone pumped full of this shit would ring some alarm bells. Hopefully more and more people are seeing this. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic, says Mark. Thanks, Mark. Good tweet, son. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. Thanks to everybody who's tweeted me about Panorama. I wasn't aware of it until you tweeted me. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Lovely. And there are a number of doctors in Ireland. Thank you, Noel Cox. How you doing, Noel Cox? There are a number of doctors in Ireland, GPs, refusing to recommend the coronavirus jabs for their patients. I know this, and some of them are facing severe criticism, and some of them are facing calls for their heads. Off with their heads. Vernon sent me a link to dublinlive.ie the other day, and it's about a doctor who is on his conscience, a conscientious objector, is refusing to recommend this vaccine. Gerard Waters, is it, or Waters? I can't remember now. Struggling here, but my memory is good, but I'm struggling. Is it Gerald or Gerard Waters? Is it help me out here? I can't remember. But yes, Irish doctors, increasingly GPs, are saying no, we're not going to recommend this because we don't think our patients actually need it. Hi to Peter McCann. Thanks again for the recommendation about Panorama. Hi to Lula. How you doing, Lula? What kind of world are we in when people don't bat an eyelid at testing vaccines and 5-year-olds, says Lula. Also, my waist has grown through the lockdowns, so I'd be stuck at home, says Lula. Indeed, you'd be stuck at home. I wouldn't be, though. I'm losing weight in lockdown. That's because I'm a bit of an idiot who runs about 6 kilometres, well, 7 days a week. The BBG, not the BBC, live from Salford. Richie Allen on the radio with you till 7 o'clock. This is The Pretenders. Don't get me wrong.
Don't get me wrong. Let's not say so long.
The brilliant Chrissy Hynde, The Pretenders. Don't get me wrong. It is your Richie Allen radio show. The time is exactly 27 minutes, maybe 28 minutes. 28 minutes to the top of the hour. If you've got to be somewhere, you've still got time. Don't break your neck. Hi to Frank Chapman, but it's spelt F-R-A-N-C, so it's Frank. Frank Chapman. Frank, tell Honk, we're going with the chipper chicken. The chipper chicken we're going with. Frank says, Richie, feck him all, let's go for a bevy, lad, in Liverpool. Frank, I'd love to join you for a bevy. Problem is, all the pubs are closed. You know, that's the thing. That's the thing. It's Gerard Waters from Selbridge in County Kildare. Dr. Pat Morrissey from Adair in County Limerick are two of the doctors, according to Martin Brennan, refusing to offer the vaccine to their patients because of their concerns that the vaccine is maybe hasn't had enough time and all of that, hasn't been properly trialled and all of that. Fair play to the doctors. And according to Martin, Dr. Pat Morrissey gave a bit of a doing to Joe Duffy, an RTE radio presenter, last Wednesday evening. Good man. I'd like to hear that. Anywho, let's move right on. No, let's not move on, because there was a tweet that I missed. Let me go down and see. It's from Tracy. How you doing, Tracy? Richie, allowing entry to pubs and restaurants, by doing it and allowing only the vaccinated in, that's discrimination. And people will probably accept it, says Tracy. It is discrimination, Tracy. The government has said all along is that it won't allow it, but the government is lying. Hi to Andrew James. Hi, Andrew. Richie, at 60 years of age, I went for a huge walk today. Damn near killed me, but got to stay healthy in spite of the bastards who are trying to kill us. Much love, Richie, says Andrew. Thanks, Andrew. Let's give the last word for the moment on the vaccine passports to the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, because he was asked the question today about vaccine passports. What did he say?
Inevitably, there will be great interest in ideas like, can you show that you've had a vaccination against COVID in the way that you sometimes have to show that you've had a vaccination against yellow fever or other diseases in order to travel somewhere? I think that's going to be very much in the mix down the road. I think that is going to happen. What I don't think we will have in this country is, as it were, vaccination passports to allow you to go to, say, the pub or something like that. I think that would be going it a bit. I think that looking at the future, what we hope to have is such a high proportion of the population vaccinated that when you couple that with rapid testing, lateral flow testing, you really start to get the kind of answer that you're talking about. So I think it's in the context of a really of having vaccinated a lot of the population as we're already doing, and we'll do a lot more of in the next few months. That the rapid test approach will start, I think, to come into its own.
Right. Now, Johnson was speaking there today at a vaccination centre, and he is allegedly coming under serious pressure from his backbenchers and the so-called COVID recovery group, which is more or less an anti-lockdown group. COVID recovery group wants to see a return to normal and easing of restrictions by April, Easter time thereabouts. They say most of the seriously vulnerable have been vaccinated, therefore it's time. They don't know the half of it, do they? But anyway, fair dues to them. Back to Boris Johnson. He was asked about this today. I think you'll hear the question.
Can you just say a bit about your approach? You want to drive down infection rates. You want to protect the NHS. But once they're low and the vulnerable have been vaccinated, what do you do then? Is it OK for the virus to circulate amongst the 20s, 30s and 40s? Do you learn to live with coronavirus like flu, as Matt Hancock was saying at the weekend?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think we would like to see the rates of infection come down very low indeed, and that's why we have the tough border regimes to stop infection coming in, and as we get ever better with testing and tracing and enforcing fights against the new variants, we'll want to see that those rates really, really low, because the risk is that if you have a large, as it were, volume of circulation, if you've got loads of people, even young people, getting the disease, and a couple of things happen. First of all, you have a higher risk of new variants, of mutations, within the population where the disease is circulating. Secondly, there will also be a greater risk of the disease spreading out into the older groups again. And although the vaccines are effective and great, of course, no vaccination program is 100% effective. And so when you have a large volume of circulation, we've got a lot of disease, inevitably the vulnerable will suffer. So that's why we want to drive it right down, keep it right down.
Mm. And the quarantine began today, by the way. People arriving from 33 countries on a so-called red list will have to quarantine in a hotel near the airport they arrive at, or the port they arrive at, today, at a cost of £1,750 for them. Right, you can follow that on any of the mainstream media websites. Anybody coming in from those countries, of course, this is going to put people off coming in from those countries. You and I both know this. Now, Johnson himself is at Downing Street this afternoon, and he is there with God knows who. It's probably Whitty and Valance. Maybe it's a combination of Whitty and Valance, or Valance and Jonathan Van Dam. I don't know. But Johnson has been asked a question by a BBC journalist to do with the lockdown. In other words, is it the last lockdown? Please God, is it? Let's hear the question and then the answer. This is fresh, hot off the presses.
Prime Minister, you say you want this to be the last lockdown, but can you really give that guarantee given the unpredictable nature of this pandemic? And does that mean we're looking at a very gradual easing of restrictions? Should we rule out get-togethers and getaways at Easter, for example?
Alex, no, I can't give that guarantee. Of course not, because we're battling with with nature, with a disease that is capable of mutating and changing. I'm increasingly confident. I'm increasingly optimistic about the sheer extent of the possibilities that are opening up with vaccinations. I'll be setting out as much of a timetable as we can give on the 22nd, and I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to go ahead and open things up and I'll be saying that. But to say I can give an absolute cast iron guarantee that we won't face further difficulties and have to think harder and deeper about some problems, Alex, at this stage I can't. But I don't want people to think that I'm not optimistic. I think there's been a big change, and the big change is that science is now unquestionably in the ascendancy over the disease, and that's manifested in all sorts of ways, not just through vaccination, but also with better therapies, and they're getting better the whole time. So, people should be very, very much encouraged by what's going on at the moment, but we want to set out a timetable that is realistic, and that means one that is obviously cautious and takes account of...
They're apparently going to lay out a roadmap next week, a roadmap to ending lockdown. Apparently, I don't know. Right, we won't go to any more of that conference there. Like I said, I don't know who he's flanked by. I think Valence might be there, might be with you. I haven't a clue. It probably doesn't matter. It's exactly 19 minutes to 6 o'clock. It's the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. Let's crack on, because there's quite a bit more to get through this hour before Dr. Vernon Coleman joins me. Let's hear a bit of a debate. Now, it's not really a debate, but it's the best the mainstream media can do. Sky News, this Arvo, I've got you, my Aussie listeners, you flaming galas, I've got you, listening to the Richie Allen Show, driving your utes, with your pet duck-billed platypuses in the seats next to you. All right, a debate between, in the red corner, Gabriel Scally, prophet of doom, Irish guy, member of Independence Age, Gabriel Scally, told everyone that the pandemics, the swine flu vaccine, was safe back in 2009. Swine flu. Take it. You'll be grand. You'll be fine. You'll be grand, said Gabriel Scally back in 2009. There are still people falling asleep behind the wheels of their cars because of that wanker, Gabriel Scally. And in the blue corner, the Conservative MP Craig McKinley from the COVID recovery group mentioned earlier. Tory MP Craig McKinley. He wants to open up. Scally wants to keep us all locked down in case we all die. Let's hear first from the Tory MP Craig McKinley. Sarah Hewson from Sky News is moderating. It's too early to open up, she says to McKinley, the Tory. And he says what?
Well, we've been told from the very start that the cavalry coming over the hill is the vaccine. That vaccine rollout is exceptionally good. We know that 88% of those who have sadly died have been in those groups that are now, by today plus 21 days, will or should be largely protected. But that rollout isn't stopping. We're going down to the 65 to 69s, and you know, in a few weeks, hopefully, they might even get to me, the over 50s. So by the time that is done, we should have protected 99% of people from even the chance of premature death. So by then, we need to keep the government to its word that we don't need lockdown for a moment sooner or longer than is necessary. And that obviously means getting children back to school. That means getting the non-essential shops open, allowing a degree of outside exercise, and hopefully getting our hospitality industry, which has been so badly affected, open, I hope, from Easter. And I think Easter should be a key date where we really start looking at unwinding, and then hopefully by the end of April, actually getting rid of some of the draconian legislation that has kept us in our houses and stopped us from just having a normal life. I'm a libertarian conservative, and I feel very uncomfortable with what we have had to live through over the last year.
Yes, that was McKinley. Over to the Independent Sage member Gabriel Scally, prophet of doom. Yeah. Your response, Gabriel?
Well, there are an awful lot of people who haven't managed to live through the last year and have died because...
They've died! Well, you hear how many times this guy says people have died and long COVID.
...because of the mismanagement of this pandemic. And there would have been an awful lot more if it hadn't been for serious social restriction, for the good behaviour of the vast majority of citizens, and for all the efforts of the NHS. And... certainly, we have to move forward, and vaccines are a great thing. I think they offer enormous promise, but to maximise...
They offer a lot of promise. This is the guy, remember, who told everybody to take the swine flu vaccine. He made a video about it and everything, and now he's telling us vaccines are great.
The benefit we get from the vaccines, we have to do it in a move forward in a cautious way. We have to get the numbers down. I prefer to be led by the data rather than the dates. Get the numbers of cases down, keep them down by improving our very poor contact tracing. You know, the great talk about the number of tests. We don't actually test close contacts of people who have tested positive. We only test them if they actually get symptoms themselves. We ignore the rest of the close contacts. That's way outside the guidance. And if we're going to get schools back, we have to get them back in a safe way, with more space in the schools, taking over other premises, with better ventilation, and with, I think, another look at mask wearing.
What? You want to take a look at what? For the kids? What was that you want to take a look at?
With better ventilation and with, I think, another look at mask wearing.
He wants the kids to wear masks in schools, this madman.
And it completely...
Oh, now, let's wait till you hear him talk about long COVID.
He ignores long COVID. Long COVID is such a problem. One in four people aged 25 to 34, for example, will have long COVID.
What? One in four people aged 25 to what? Will have long what? COVID?
One in four people aged 25 to 34, for example, will have long COVID.
Just making it up. One in four people aged between 25 and 34 will have long COVID. He just made that up. He made it up. And the presenter is so fucking useless that you wouldn't ask him, where'd you get that, Gabriel? Gabriel, shut up. Where did you get that statistic about the one in four, 25 to 34-year-olds? She just lets them go on.
5 weeks or more. The average long COVID case is 9 months.
What? What was that? Now, this is a monumental fucking lie. When you think of how long we've had COVID in our lives, right? Not even 12 months, really, right? And long COVID now, COVID. We've only had COVID, right, in our lives for about a year. We didn't hear about long COVID till the middle of last summer. Now this liar is saying that the average person with long COVID has it for 9 months. He's lying.
5 to 34, for example.
Wait, you
we
hear
have
him?
Long COVID, 5 weeks or more. The average long COVID case is 9 months.
Liar! That's lies! That is absolute bullshit. I mean, you couldn't make this up. The presenter must know. He couldn't know that. They didn't set a clock. When somebody last summer or last autumn, when they looked at somebody and said, we think he has long COVID, they didn't start the clock on him. This is absolute horse shit. He's lying through his teeth. I am not libeling him. He can sue me if he wants. He's been caught with his pants on fire on national television. The average person with long COVID will have it for the term that a woman normally carries a baby, he said. 9 months. The lying bastard.
Problem. One in four people aged 25 to 34, for example, will have long COVID. 5 weeks or more.
How does he know that? One in four people aged 25 to 34 will have long COVID for 5 weeks or more. And then the greatest lie told on television today.
The average long COVID case is 9 months.
Liar!
We just can't afford to let the virus loose. It has to be a measured response and it has to...
Liar! What does McKinley say? The Tory MP who doesn't agree with him. Sadly, not very much.
You know, we have to, I think, be honest with people that we are not going to eliminate COVID. We need to keep it at a low and sensible level that we can accept, that the NHS can cope with. But the corollaries of just keeping locked down, it may work, but is so very damaging in terms of other health outcomes for people's mental health, for you know, those who are just avoiding going to get their diagnoses for cancers. We've already got a very growing list in the NHS for those elective treatments of new knees and all of those good things. And that's without even considering the effect on the economy, which is the government borrowing another £1 billion a day. We need to get this balance right. And I think after a year of this type of lockdown, and we've all changed our behaviour, and I don't think that's going to come back anytime soon, I think we are now becoming very aware that we are...
And that's just absolute garbage from this guy who allegedly wants to get rid of the restrictions. Did you hear what he said there? This is tragic.
...our behaviour, and I don't think that's going to come back anytime soon.
I mean, this is, listen again to this. We've all changed our behaviour and that's not coming back anytime soon.
And I think after a year of this type of lockdown, and we've all changed our behaviour, and I don't think that's going to come back anytime soon, I think we are now becoming very aware that we are, you know, not to go around handshaking, kissing people and probably gathering in too close contact. I think that's now inculcated amongst all of us and that will be with us for a long while.
Wow. You won't be kissing anybody, hugging anybody or going anywhere with anybody for a long time, says McKinley. Wow. He's supposed to be debating Scally, you know. Let's give the last word to Gabriel Scally from Independent Sage. Wait till you hear this idiot.
Oh, I don't accept it at all. You can't live with COVID. You can die with COVID.
You can die!
Get long COVID. You can be really, really ill with COVID. And, you know, and we don't accept things like measles, diphtheria, polio. We work to get rid of them. I would love it if the government would actually try and get the levels down to elimination level the way we do with measles, for example, or have tried to do with measles. And if they actually tried and put the public health measures in place. I agree with Mr. McGillion on one thing, and that is I'm against lockdowns. I think lockdowns are terrible. They should only be used as a last resort. Unfortunately, this government, it's been their only resort. And now they have vaccines they're going to, if Mr. McKinley and his colleagues had their way, would do away with all our social restrictions. I mean, this is not a way to manage our way out of this virus. There are plenty of countries in the world, big like Japan and Taiwan, that are zero COVID, have little to no or no COVID, are living normal lives, don't have deaths, don't have long COVID cases of any numbers, and whose economy is doing extraordinarily well.
Yeah, Gabriel Scally, independent sage. Did you catch that first bit again about zero COVID?
Oh, I don't accept it at all. You can't live with COVID. You can die.
Yeah, he was basically told by the MP. You didn't hear it at the end of the clip, but the MP said, we've got to learn to live with coronavirus like we live with flu.
Oh, I don't accept it at all. You can't live with COVID. You can die with COVID. You get long COVID. You can be really, really ill with COVID. And
I was listening to Scally today and I thought to myself, I've heard that voice before. I've heard it close up. I've encountered that voice, I thought. And I began to think about it. And I went through, we've got security here at the house. It's not anything flash, the usual little bit of video and all of that. Came with the property, And I went through the video and I knew I'd encountered Gabriel Scally. I knew it. Scally has been going around, Gabriel Scally, knocking on doors to persuade people to get the vaccine. And he came here, or at least I'm sure it's him, because the image on the camera, the video image is a bit grainy. I can't be 100% that Scally knocked on our door here in Salford, but I'm pretty sure it was him. And I answered now. I answered, and my camera setup here has got audio as well. I'm sure it was Scally. You listen for yourself and you be the judge now. You be the judge on whether it was Scally at my door or not.
I'm glad you have this opportunity to talk with your family out of the way, because I believe you have a problem here.
I'm sorry, mate, I'm not having the vaccine. Now, please leave before I set my golden retriever on you and she'll take a pee all over those nice loafers.
You are in danger. I'm with an organization whose concern is families like your own, families in crisis that are preyed upon by charlatans with fake magic and false solutions. Now, I don't expect you to believe me now.
Give over.
Let me come in and talk to you about this.
You're not coming in. Give over. I'm not interested in the vaccine. There's no crisis here. And Dr. Vernon Coleman is not a charlatan. Now get on your bike.
Please open your heart and your mind to what I'm saying.
No, feck off and take your poison jabs with you, will you, Scally?
You're gonna die in there. All of you. You are gonna die.
Jesus, huh?
What kind of fuckery are you?
Well, that was Bruce Springsteen. You were supposed to be listening to John Cougar Mellencamp. But the very sophisticated playout system that I've got, and it is very sophisticated, just decided to eject John Cougar and to play the last clip that I loaded into it. I've just rebooted it. And let's hope it doesn't do it again. Yes, things don't often go wrong. But when they do, you've got to smile, I suppose. John Cougar Mellencamp. I'll play that another time because it's a great track. And I haven't heard it in ages. R-O-C-K in the USA. That's the one. Rock. R-O-C-K in the USA. Right. So Dr. Vernon Coleman will be on the programme right soon. He's limbering up, I do believe. I'll read one or two more of your tweets when I come back after this. Do not go anywhere. The time is exactly 2 minutes to 6 o'clock.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
All righty, welcome back to the program.
Thanks to you, The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
And it is 6 o'clock. Dr. Vernon Coleman joining the program really soon. Thanks for all the tweets today, lots of them. At BBG Richie, you know that by now. I do like to hear from you. You do keep me informed, it must be said. Things I don't know about, things I wouldn't know about if it wasn't for your beady eyes there. Hi to Susan Lewis. How you doing, Susan? Oh my God, every time someone can bring to my attention a blatant lie, such as 9 months is the average of long COVID, it adds to my confidence, she says, and subsequently my freedom. It's a gargantuan lie, of course, by Gabriel Scally. It's an outrage that he would be allowed to say such things, to make such claims on national television and national radio and not be challenged. But that's where we are in 2021. It's where we've been for quite a long time, isn't it? Not to be challenged and presenters just standing there. What are you going to do? Right, okay. Hi to Andy Newman. How you doing? My NHS letter doesn't give me a refusal option. Yeah. Yeah. And we've heard from people, haven't we, who've said to us that when they have been asked, when they've been phoned or contacted by the NHS and they've said no thanks, they've been told that they would be put onto a decline list. One or two people have told us that. Hi to Amanda Thompson. How you doing? Hi to Shu Hurley. How you doing, Shu? Enormous amount of tweets coming into the programme today. Let's welcome back to the programme the one and only Dr. Vernon Coleman, multiple best-selling author, former GP. Not going to say too much more about Vernon. You know all about him. If you want to get free ebooks talking about these subjects, do go to vernoncoleman.com or on my website, Proof That Face Masks Do More Harm Than Good. COVID-19, the greatest hoax in history. Two free ebooks packed full of information and brilliantly referenced as well. Check them out. Welcome back, Dr. Vernon Coleman. Welcome back, Vernon.
Thanks, Richie. How are you doing?
I'm not too shabby, thanks. I'm glad you're here. There's a lot going on. I don't know where to start, but I'm going to start by playing you a 20-second soundbite of Gabriel Scally from Independent Sage, because I think Scally on Sky News today might well have told, well, a double whopper, Vernon, with bacon and cheese and extra fries. Have a listen.
One in four people aged 25 to 34, for example, will have long COVID, 5 weeks or more. The average long COVID case is 9 months. We just can't afford to let the virus loose. It has to be a measured response and it has to come with some really, really good public health interventions and messaging.
How could Scally possibly know that long COVID sufferers average their symptoms or their symptoms average 9 months? How could he know that?
Well, since it wasn't diagnosed 9 months ago, a pretty good guess. It's obviously got some sort of key to the future, which we should get in touch with him and ask him who's going to win the derby this year. What a load of... They're using long COVID, of course, as part of a very, very sophisticated threat. And I think we've now reached a point in the whole of this hoax fraud, we've reached a point of almost no return. They are the other side, our enemy, the other side of this war, are gearing up. They're closing down, demonizing anybody who tells the truth. They're aggressively thinking up new things to do, new ways to frighten people, new nonsense. I've got some amazing stuff. No one who hasn't had the vaccine will want it by 7 o'clock. Anyone who's had it would probably be wise to turn off now because it is terrifying. I tell you, Richie, the stuff that's happening with this premeditated cull is quite extraordinary. And the lies just keep going, don't they? You can't, I mean, the very obvious first lie at the end of the year was that there'd been a massive number of extra deaths from COVID. Well, I've got in front of me the Office for National Statistics, which says that the crude mortality rate per 100,000 population was 1016, in 2020. And in 1990, it was 117. It's very similar. The number of people who were dying last year it's actually lower. The number of people who died in 2020 was actually lower than the number of people who died in 1990. So what's all this about? The problem is that this year the number of deaths is going to be a lot higher because of all the lockdown deaths. They keep saying they've cleared all the problems, the waiting lists. There are millions of people waiting for surgery. There are millions of people waiting to have mammograms and all sorts of other things. The death rates from alcohol are soaring. The number of people dying from alcohol is soaring. And this propaganda nonsense, at the heart of which is, of course, the BBC. Which I found out something over the weekend, which is quite extraordinary. The government, and I'm using government figures an awful lot, so that the fact checkers, as they call themselves, can have some fun. According to the gov.uk, coronavirus jobs that qualify for travel exemptions include, as you might expect, drivers of goods vehicles, because they have to go through across to the continent. Channel tunnel system workers, yes, they have to go through. Journalists, no, they don't have qualify for travel exemptions. Television production, no, they don't. High-end television production, film production, no, they don't have any special treatment. But guess what? BBC Broadcasting Transmission Network and Services, no need to self-isolate if they have been abroad and come back. What is going on? This corrupt, terrible organization, which is lying and cheating and demonizing and hiding the facts, they get special treatment. I'm not surprised they get special treatment. The horrors, Fauci said the other day, the COVID vaccine may become mandatory. And as you know, MPs are jumping all over the place that the vaccine may become mandatory and people won't even be able to buy food unless they've had their jab.
Yeah.
CDC recommends putting hosiery over your face with your 2, 3, or 4 masks. You're supposed to put your tights over your face with your mask. That's what the CDC recommends. I'm not making this up. It says, place a sleeve made of sheer nylon hosiery. I don't know whether you're allowed to have those little patterns down the back or not, but it's make a sleeve made of sheer nylon hosiery material around the neck. I don't think it means tie it tight, but no. It could do. And pull it up over either a cloth or medical procedure mask. There was a picture I saw, I think it was on the wretched BBC, which shows somebody had got the bit of nylon stocking the wrong way round, but never mind.
Yeah.
So they're doing that. They're talking about a new Oxford jab ready for the autumn to tackle all the variants that they're expecting. Talking about lockdowns all the way until the summer. I said last year, way back months ago, that 2020 would be worse, and it is going to be worse. They're blaming anybody who goes to the shops for the virus outbreak. They've banned outdoor exercise in Berkeley in America. They're talking about vaccinating children, as you know, and they're also talking about vaccine trials on babies. Children as young as 6 months old are going to be trialed with the vaccine. As far as I'm aware, still, the only children of that sort of age who've died have been ones with very serious comorbidities. So they're going to risk vaccinating children, small babies, against a disease that they don't get, and if they do get it, it doesn't do them any harm. And yet, at the bottom of this, the damage to children is phenomenal. Even Ofsted's admitted that COVID-19 isolation is detrimental for children. Oh, gosh, how long did it take them to work that one out, I wonder? And yet there are bright little sparks, aren't there? There's that Irish GP who was brave enough to say, I'm not going to vaccinate people with this stuff. I'm going to give it myself, so I'm not going to give it to anybody. And I tell you what, before I start the really horrific stuff, can you explain to me why all these celebrities and politicians are getting their hair cut? How are they managing to get their hair cut?
How are they doing it in lockdown? It's a good question, isn't it?
Hey, anyway, look at the stuff. I've been, as you know...
Can I ask you to do something before you get into the awful stuff? Because when you come on every Monday, I get plagued is a terrible word to use. I get inundated with questions for you. And one of the questions I was asked to put to you, and I'll do it now because I'll forget it later on, and then I'll get out of your way and you can talk about what you've discovered. But one of the things I was asked to put to you, and you did touch on it, this idea about being coerced into taking the vaccine by being banned from your shop or your cinema. Listen to this very short 35-second clip from Sky News' Mark Stone. He's based in Tel Aviv in Israel. The Israelis, absolutely no bones about it, not trying to sugarcoat it, have told their citizens, if you ain't vaxxed, you ain't getting in. And our listeners want you to comment on this. Here's Mark Stone, Sky News.
Uli Edelstein is proposing, and I think this is something that may well get through the parliament here, is that anyone who hasn't had a vaccine, two doses of the vaccine, won't be allowed to go to restaurants, bars, shopping malls, gyms. They will just be banned from entry. And it will be incumbent, Adam, on the citizen to prove that they've had a vaccine. That, they think, is the only way they're going to be able to reopen the country. But as the doctor just outlined there, if they're not able to get enough young people into the vaccination centres, then the problem they're going to have is that 90% level that they need the country to be vaccinated, 90% of the country vaccinated. If they haven't got it that high, then it's going to be very, very difficult for the country to reopen.
Vernon, they've even put DJs at vaccination centres in Israel and free food, and they've told the young, if you don't have it, your social life is over. And I was inundated with people today saying, to ask you, do you feel it's inevitable that the UK government will follow suit?
No, I don't. I think as long as enough of us are saying no, and the last survey I saw was an amazing 30% or so of people who were saying, no, I don't trust the government on this vaccine stuff. And which one do you have to get your passport? Because the last time I looked, and it might have changed now, but the last time I looked, the AstraZeneca wasn't accepted in America. I don't know whether they've passed it through yet. So if you had that one and then get your passport with that one, it won't help you get into America because they'll say you haven't had the right vaccine. So what's going to happen with that? And also, the big thing is that a number of people who are going to have the vaccine or who have had the vaccine will be dead or won't be able to travel. So it's a question of what do you want? Do you want to be dead or do you want to not have the vaccine? I'm not having the vaccine. You're not having the vaccine, are you?
No.
We know that a lot of people will say no, whatever happens, as long as there's a million or 2 million, and that's a very tiny proportion, who are saying, no, I am not having this vaccine, then they can't starve that many people. They just can't, because it's just going to cause too much pain, distress, and if they're going to starve us to death, then we'll obviously all go onto the streets and start rampaging, and they don't want that either, because they don't want to draw attention to it. The thing we have to do to stop this happening, to stop mandatory vaccination, is first and foremost to draw attention to the horrors of the vaccine, to persuade people not to have it, to explain to people what will happen to them if they do choose to have it, and almost worst of all, what will happen if they have the second vaccine, because that's one of the things I've discovered. This whole scenario gets worse and worse and worse by the minute. There are papers being published, brave scientists and doctors, which are all being ignored by the wretches in the mass media who are just not covering any of the stuff. You know that stupid woman whose name I've forgotten, who you got that quote from her saying,
Emma Barnett, yeah.
We don't debate with anti-vaxxers. Well, to use a sporting metaphor, that's like the Beeb saying, we're going to report on a football match between Manchester United and Liverpool, but we're only going to tell the viewers if Liverpool score and what Liverpool does. We're going to ignore everything Manchester... Yeah. How can you have an organisation which exists? Lord Reith said right at the beginning, it exists to educate and inform. But it's not educating and informing, and everyone who's only got their information from the BBC and who has been vaccinated can say they haven't been informed, because the BBC has just not told people any of the things which it's important for them to have. You look at the quotes. The BBC was saying just the other day that the problems, the side effects, were that there were none. There were nothing serious. It was all quite okay to have. What they were doing, of course, was quoting Bill Gates' friends, BBC's Bill Gates' friends, but they were quoting Bill Gates' chums, who was saying, there's no serious adverse events. The medicines, health products, regulatory rubbish, that lot, you know. The fact is that the problems, the health problems, are phenomenal. The number of people who've been killed and died is... or been seriously injured is massive. There's a list up to date on your website and on my website. And yet, the care home deaths are soaring. The care home deaths are soaring, and the response is not to say, hang on a minute, could this be the vaccine? The response is to say, oh, it's just coincidence. It can't possibly be our vaccine. What we need to do is to vaccinate more people. On the 5th of February... the BBC website responded to the question, is the COVID-19 vaccine safe, with this reply, open quotes, although some people get mild side effects, both vaccines are extremely safe. They're only extremely safe if you don't count death as a serious side effect. They're constantly doing the same thing. They're blaming COVID-19, because you tested positive and had it within 28 days or whatever, for all the deaths. And blaming the government for none of them. It's a massive triple-headed fraud. Governments, regulators, and the media. In America, the CDC, the last time I looked, had reported 653 deaths and 12,000 injuries. Wow. I wonder if the people at the BBC would feel quite the same if a loved one had died or was lying paralysed in bed, because that's one of the side effects.
And you think you think that's massively significant to 653? Just before you answer that, 7 seconds, we've a lot of brand new listeners listening to this programme. They might not believe that the BBC said it wouldn't debate anti-vaxxers, even if they were right, Emma Barnett.
We actually don't, as a matter of editorial policy, we don't debate with anti-vaxxers whether they're right or wrong. We actually don't do that.
Sorry to do that. I had to do that because it's hugely pertinent to what you're saying right now. So 653 deaths, says the CDC. The BBC couldn't be arsed to report it. Can you tell my listeners, our listeners, I should say, is 653 in a massive population like America, is it significant?
It's very significant, because if don't forget that this is a vaccine. This isn't a drug to save your life. The policy with drugs should be that if you have a serious, serious life-threatening illness and you take a drug which might kill you, then that's acceptable if the alternative is that you're going to die anyway. If you have a mild disease or no disease, if you have, for example, hay fever, and you take a drug which is likely to kill you or possibly kill you, then you might think that that was not fair, because you don't want to die to stop sneezing. And the vaccine, the number of people who've had the vaccine is still relatively small in America. The numbers who have got very serious illnesses, we're not talking about a bit of a sore arm. We're talking about people who are paralyzed. We're talking about people who've had strokes. We're talking about Bell's palsy, which isn't a lot of fun. And we're talking a massive 2.5% to 3% of the people who have the vaccine getting serious adverse events. That's a huge number. And if you say, well, we're going to vaccinate, as Bill Gates says, we're going to vaccinate all 7 million, well, you don't need much of a calculator to work out that's a lot of millions of people dying and a lot of tens or hundreds of millions of people who are being seriously injured.
Out of 7.5 billion, you're right, you're talking millions. You're talking millions and millions. I can't do the mathematics, but somebody will do it. 3% of 7.5 billion is massive. Well, 1% of it is 750 million, isn't it? No.
Yeah, that's
75 million. Wow.
Killed seriously with serious adverse events that stop you going to work.
75 million.
You being able to do your look after yourself at home, or require a doctor to, or a health professional to look after you. That's what serious adverse events mean in the States. Meanwhile, the mass market media continues to oppress us. By us, I mean the people who are talking about this and want to just share the facts. The other day, The Guardian, of course, which has links to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, used to be a lefty-lefty paper, appears to have gone slightly the other way, because The Guardian the other day, a writer there, called for dangerous falsehoods to be prohibited. He didn't say what he thought the dangerous falsehoods about coronavirus, COVID-19 were, but I bet you a bottom dollar they weren't, that it's going to kill you. Everyone who gets close to the Gatesian viper-filled pit is calling for censorship, and they're calling for prohibitions on people. You've had your Facebook taken down. I'm banned from YouTube. I was never allowed on Facebook. I'm banned from just about everywhere except here, brand YouTube, and my website. The dangers of these vaccines is because they're experimental. And the big danger, which I've been saying all along, the big danger is not now. It's 3, 6, 9 months' time, 2, 5, 10 years' time, because that's when the huge problem's going to happen. And one big problem that is going to happen is after the second jab, and not many people have had the second jab, but doctors have known since 1913 that a second injection of what, for simplicity, I will call a poison, because it's something that is offensive to the body, can sensitize the patient and produce a greater chance of an anaphylactic reaction. Now, the first dose was causing anaphylactic problems. That's why doctors were told that they had to have an anaphylactic set handy, not locked away, not in a trolley somewhere, but right next to the patient, because there was a danger, and they admitted this, there was a danger of anaphylactic shock reactions. And the medicines health regulatory people, who were looking for software just a few months ago to be able to keep a record of what they admitted they expected was to be a lot of side effects, they know that. But in 1913, it was known that if you had a second injection of something which, as I say, for simplicity, I'll call a poison, but the jab, then there's a much greater chance of an anaphylactic shock reaction, an anaphylactic state. And it takes more than 3 weeks. If you wait more than 3 weeks, the longer you wait, the worse it seems to get. But if you wait 3 weeks after the first jab and then have a second jab, you never go back to normal. You become susceptible to anaphylactic shocks. That, I found, was in a Nobel lecture, a lecture by a Nobel Prize winner. The drug industry is being praised to the skies, as though it's like praising arms companies for making a new hand grenade that blows off kids' arms and legs. You know, those wonderful things that they sell. But the pharmaceutical industry is less responsible than Pablo Escobar. He used to build villages for his people. The pharmaceutical industry, I've talked before on your program, Richie, about GSK, AstraZeneca, Pfizer. You can mention these people, and
billions of fines.
Billions of fines. And we're talking, the mass market media is saying how wonderful these people are. They've done all this kind work. Pfizer, the other day, they said, oh, wow, we've got 15 billion extra profit from these. Bill Gates, I bet he's pleased. Bill Gates, co-financial links with the BBC and The Guardian. Bill Gates, of course, has got huge shareholding in Pfizer.
20 to 1 return, I believe. anybody investing in these companies that have manufactured a COVID jab, it's a 20-to-1 return. Amazing.
It ain't bad, is it?
No.
And Pfizer have said, oh, this is really great. They didn't say that. But what they actually said, more or less, I'm paraphrasing, was that this is going to be really good because we're going to have to do more of these vaccines every year because this little thing is going to mutate. So we're going to have to keep making lots of new jabs, and people are going to have at least one a year and probably more than that. And we're going to have to jab all the little kiddies as well, whether they get it or not. We're going to have to jab all of those. So that's all these people we're going to jab. And you have to remember that these drug companies, more evil in my eyes than Pablo Escobar and the Colombian cartels, that when they test a new drug, when they test, say, an arthritis drug, they don't test it against a sugar pill. They usually test it against a well-established drug to see how their product stands up. So if it's an anti-arthritis drug, for example, they'll test it against aspirin. But they won't test it against coated aspirin or soluble aspirin. They test it against the common garden stuff that they know burns a hole in your stomach and that no one with their brain in the right way round would actually prescribe for a patient. And then they know pretty well for certain that however crappy their anti-arthritis drug is, it's going to be safer than old, crummy old aspirin. When they test a new vaccine, they don't test it against a nice bit of distilled water. They test it against some grotty vaccine that's known to produce terrible side effects. So they can say, well, our new Wonderfund vaccine is much safer than the thing we tested it against. Well, the fact that the thing that you tested it against wouldn't be used by drain cleaner, by anybody with half a brain, should mean that the stuff is no good. But they don't say that.
Can you settle a bet? Can you settle a bet for me? When June Rain and her colleagues at the MHRA, the regulatory agency in the UK, when it looks... That's well said. Yeah, she's received, projects that she herself has been involved in the past, have received money directly from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, when they look at the data, so June Rain says, if you believe her, we get the data on the trials and we look at the data and we make a conclusion. We reach a conclusion. Is she getting data handed to her directly from Pfizer? Is that how it works? And then
the research is being done by Pfizer.
Yeah.
The research that's being done, the ongoing research, which is very small, is very specific and seems to be designed simply to increase the number of vaccines that they can sell.
My question then, and a lot of people are saying this on social media, my question is then, if Pfizer says to the MHRA, oh, we've given it to 1,000 people or 2,000 people and we found that it's really efficacious, it's great and it hardly touches anybody, is she basically taking them at their word?
Yes.
Honestly?
Yes. And the link, Bill Gates, Pfizer, Medicines Health Regulatory and Public Health England, the links, it's a nice little circle. BBC, Guardian, Bill Gates, Pfizer, regulators. Yeah, it's the research isn't done separately, privately by governments. The research is done by the drug companies.
Yeah.
And let's remember that the amount of money floating around, what nauseates me is that the people at The Guardian and the BBC and stuff, they're all getting paid to repeat all these lies. The fact checkers, the fact checkers all getting big money from Facebook and whatever. There's thousands of them all over the world getting big money from Facebook and wherever. Whereas those of us who are fighting this, I'm spending a fortune. I'm not making any money out of this. I'm spending a fortune on bloody printer refills, which I buy by the 3, and paper, which I buy by the 2,000, because I'm old-fashioned and I prefer to have everything printed out. That's what's so annoying, is these people are treating us as though we're in this to make money. We're in this because I'm talking about all the people who are campaigning about this. We're in this because we passionately believe that this huge fraud is going to kill a vast number of people. Let me tell you something else I found out. Peer-reviewed article. Well, it's actually an article that's been accepted by the journal Microbiology and Infectious Diseases. So if it's been accepted, it's been looked at. Called COVID-19 RNA-based vaccines and the risk of prion disease. And the author of that concludes the regulatory approval of the RNA-based vaccines was premature and that the vaccine may cause much more harm than benefit. He says, the author of this, Dr. Carson, says that, open quotes, vaccines have been found to cause a host of chronic late-developing adverse events. Some, like type 1 diabetes, may not occur until 3 to 4 years after a vaccine is administered. That's been known for nearly 20 years. And he goes on to say that the frequency of... This is in a scientific journal. It's not in The Guardian or The Sunday Times or The Telegraph. It's in a scientific journal. Open quotes. The frequency of cases of adverse events may surpass the frequency of cases of severe infectious disease the vaccine was designed to prevent.
Can you please repeat that? Can you please repeat that statement? This is very important.
The frequency of cases of adverse events may surpass the frequency of cases of severe infectious disease the vaccine was designed to prevent.
Wow.
Given that type 1 diabetes, I'm still quoting, given that type 1 diabetes is only one of many immune-mediated diseases potentially caused by vaccines, chronic late-occurring adverse events are a serious public health issue, close quotes. The same paper then goes on with a warning that COVID-19 vaccines could induce prion diseases such as Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is causes terrible brain problems, usually kills within a year. There's no treatment. This is mad cow disease, effectively. Scrapie. I've seen sheep. I kept sheep, not to eat, but just because they were pets. And two of them died of scrapie. It is a horrible disease, which is similar to Creutzfeldt-Jakob. Finally, the author of this paper, who's already talked about diabetes type 1 and Creutzfeldt-Jakob with all the prion diseases that might be caused, he goes on to say many, and I'm quoting now, and this is the journal I quoted earlier, quotes, many have raised the warning that the current epidemic of COVID-19 is actually the result of a bioweapons attack released in part by individuals in the US government. Such a theory is not far-fetched, given that the 2001 anthrax attack in the US originated at Fort Detrick, a US Army bioweapon facility, because the FBI's anthrax investigation was closed against the advice of the lead FBI agent. There are likely conspirators still working in the U.S. government. In such a scenario, the primary focus of stopping a bioweapon attack must be to apprehend the conspirators, or the attacks will never cease. Approving a vaccine utilizing novel RNA technology without extensive testing is extremely dangerous. The vaccine could be a bioweapon and even more dangerous than the original infection, close quotes. And to the fact checkers, that's a serious scientific paper. I'm not saying that. The scientific journal that printed it is about to print it, because I saw an advanced copy.
One presenter on the BBC or Sky News could end this in a heartbeat. Yeah.
The paper in the BMJ in October, in which the authors reported on a study to determine whether sufficient literature existed, and I open quotes, to require clinicians to disclose the specific risk that COVID-19 vaccines could worsen disease upon exposure to challenge or circulating virus, close quotes. The authors concluded that it did. In other words, this is the pathogenic priming. You have the vaccine, few months later, you come across the coronavirus while you're out, you meet somebody, you come across the coronavirus, bang, you have a system shut down. And
you're in serious trouble, potentially. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest. It is 27 minutes to 7 o'clock. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show. We're live from Salford in the UK. Dr. Vernon Coleman is broadcasting from an undisclosed location somewhere in the UK. Great to have him on the programme. His website is vernoncoleman.com. Please check it out. Do download the free ebooks there. And when you can and where you can, do purchase one of his excellent books. There are dozens of them on any subject you care to mention. Medical subjects, important stuff about your diet, about your well-being, about your health. The bane of the pharmaceutical industry for decades now. Dr. Vernon Coleman, who resigned as a GP of his own volition, disgusted as he was at being asked to do something which for him was terribly wrong, and that was to disclose the medical problems of his patients. Great to have him on the programme. He's on every Monday to, it's the only place, sadly, and I don't say this to brag, I really do not, I've been around too long, the only place in the UK where an expert gets to say, listen, I've got something different to tell you than what your government is telling you. That's why he's here every Monday. And everything he discusses or discloses here is referenced with what would you call it? There's basically a glossary on his website of references to papers and to news outlets and articles which back up everything he is saying on this programme. I said to you today, there's been an acceleration in the last couple of days, and I'm generally fairly mild mannered and unflappable, but I'm a bit antsy and a bit nervous the last few days. What do you think?
Yeah, me too. It's getting nasty. They're shutting down more and more of the truth. I've been issuing a challenge for heaven knows how many months, which I repeated yesterday in a video on Brand New Tube. A challenge. The BBC is determined that there are no dangers and that the vaccines work. Even the World Health Organization says that they don't stop you getting the disease and they don't stop you spreading it. The BBC doesn't believe that. The BBC has its own secret source of information. It must have. And their fact checkers at the BBC, if they were seven-year-olds working in an infant school, the mistress would throw them out and tell them to come back when they'd grown up a bit. My challenge is to the BBC to organise a live debate. No one but an idiot would go into a BBC studio if it wasn't a live debate. A live debate between Whitty, Valance and Hancock on the one side and me or somebody who's saying similar stuff to me. I don't want to go into a BBC studio. I've presented heaven knows how many programmes for the BBC over the years and I never want to see a studio again. But I will do it if they fix it up live. And I send that challenge to the BBC because the big question is, if you have a contentious problem like this, COVID-19, which millions of people around the world still believe has been a wildly exaggerated so-called plague, and a vaccine that probably a third of the country still don't believe in. That was a poll on Sunday, I can't remember which paper. But if that many people still doubt it, why don't they have a debate? If Whitty, Valance and Hancock are right and I'm wrong, they can destroy me in a live debate. I tell you why they won't have a debate is because they won't destroy me, because I've got all the facts and the evidence, and all they've got is a load of hot air, lies, deceits and manipulations and psychological warfare to try and get people frightened so that people who are terrified will then say, oh, I must have the vaccine because it'll save me. The vaccine will not stop you getting, and the vaccine will not stop you spreading. But the vaccines are dangerous. This is the biggest cover-up and fraud and scandal in history. They won't talk about it because they can't stand up what they're saying. They can't sustain what they're saying. Everyone who speaks out about it is damned and attacked by paid fact checkers. Anyone you get lied about, demonized and banned. Brave doctors are being struck off the register, threatened with all sorts of stuff. In America, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has a wonderful website, had his Instagram account permanently deleted for saying that Hank Aaron, a famous American sportsman who died, was a part of a wave of suspicious deaths after administration of COVID vaccines. That's all he said, and Instagram took him down. And yet, all of this, a third of Britons still don't believe this. I saw a report from India today, which said that most government hospital health workers in Delhi have refused to take the COVID vaccine. One of them said, and I've got it written down, I'm not yet ready to take a vaccine for which the trials have not even been completed.
But
of course, is that in India, people know all about Bill Gates' vaccines. And then as a result, they know, you just check, I did a video about Bill Gates' vaccines in India. The truth is, vaccines have always been dangerous. The Centers for Disease and Prevention in America has got, I think it's 16 recommended vaccines for children. The leaflets that go with those vaccines list 400 ways that vaccines can kill or injure you. Heart attacks, strokes, brain disorders, nerve disorders, allergies, inflammations, and death. They kill loads of people. The BBC says, oh, the vaccines are wonderful. But vaccines, why then has the American government paid out billions of dollars to people who've been injured by vaccines?
Billions.
Why does the British government, why do they have a sort of standard fee, a miserly standard fee of $120,000, which you told me the other day, the British government has now included the COVID-19 vaccine, because of course all the drug companies are immune. Bill Gates said the drug companies and everybody else using the vaccine, flogging it, has to be immune to being sued. Why would you want that unless you didn't think it might cause problems? The trials for the Moderna vaccine didn't include people over 80 and included only 20 people over the age of 70. But on the basis of that, the CDC in America is planning to give the vaccine to 34 million Americans over the age of 70 on the basis of a trial with 20 people.
This is important. At this stage, some people are saying, why don't you challenge him? Because it's true. I've seen this myself. I can't waste time jumping down Dr. Vernon Coleman's throat and saying, prove it. I know this to be true. While we're on the subject of the BBC, you said there about this debate between somebody like yourself, and you've earned the right to be in that debate because of your experience, right? And maybe somebody like Hennigan, maybe somebody like Sunetra Gupta. Tonight, at 7:35 UK time, Panorama, a BBC flagship documentary programme, is broadcasting a new episode entitled Vaccines, the Disinformation War. Now, as I understand it, Professor Dolores Cahill, who's been on this programme and others, very eloquently explaining what you explained about the vaccine priming your immune system. Dr. or Professor Dolores Cahill was interviewed for this programme, and my heart sank when I heard she was interviewed for it, because I know what the BBC does when it's pre-recorded, as you warned against yourself. It's called Vaccines, the Disinformation War. The reporter is Mariana Spring. Don't jump in just yet, Vernon. I know you'll have plenty to say on this. I know you'll have plenty to say. Wait for this. The programme has a paragraph. With millions now vaccinated, Panorama investigates the scare tactics of anti-vaxxers. Who are they? And what are their motives for trying to deter people from getting the jab? I know exactly what the BBC Panorama will do. It will share a tiny soundbite of Dolores Cahill, and then it will allow one of its experts tear her to pieces, but she's not there to give right of reply because she did her interview a few days ago or a week ago or whatever. Mariana Spring is the reporter tonight at 7:35. I bet you can't wait to watch it.
I shan't be watching it at all. I'll tell you something else as well. I think they're using one of the Oracle films. In fact, I know they're using one of the Oracle films that I took part in, because I've been in most or all of the recent big ones that I took part in. And the BBC claims that everybody who is in the programme, i.e. who was in the film, has been contacted for a comment. That's a porky pie. They didn't contact me. Imagine that if I didn't get hold of
them. I know, but still.
But that's what we used to call a bit of a porky pie, isn't it? Anyway, let's get back to the real stuff, because the BBC won't have anybody in the studio. That's one of the reasons why I launched my debate suggestion, challenge. If the BBC really believes that they're right, and that people like me, a huge chunk of the medical fraternity and the scientific fraternity, if they believe that they're right and that their little reporters are right and we're wrong, debate it. That's the way you do things. You debate. You don't just say, we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to debate with you. We're not going to let you in a studio. We're not going to allow you to say anything. We're going to say stuff, and then we're going to stuff you. That's not how you debate anything. That's an insult to the British public. And I don't think anybody should ever pay the BBC licence fee again. I certainly don't.
The Richie Allen Show would like to disassociate the remarks of Dr. Vernon Coleman just now. I'm only half joking. You've actually said on Brand New Tube that people, if they can find legal ways of avoiding paying the tax, they should do so. But look, I'm only jesting. You're right. Look, can you imagine Carl Hennigan? Can you imagine Sunetra Gupta? They're just like you. I bet you when Carl Hennigan was being criticised by other scientists who do get invited on all the time, I bet you Hennigan thought, one of these days they'll have a live debate. He must be stunned. Gupta must be stunned that they've not been given the chance.
No, it's only the people on stage and stuff.
Yeah.
If you pay the BBC licence fee, you're buying the bullets to kill your granny. How about that? they're always talking about save your granny. If you pay the BBC licence fee, you're buying the bullets to kill your granny. Anyway, to get back onto some more facts, because I've still got some more bits and pieces that are dug out. I was talking about the Moderna vaccine, wasn't I?
And only 20 people over, 20 OAPs actually tested, trialed.
But what happens when you do a trial on a drug or a vaccine is that you have to do a big trial, because if the vaccine only picks up, or if the vaccine kills, say, one in every 30 people, and you do a trial on 20, then there's a very good chance that you won't pick it up. So you need to do a trial on thousands of people. If you do a trial on over the age of 70, and there's only 20 in that group, and there were very few over 80s, the whole thing's been a, dear me. But then there's a very good chance that the trial wouldn't pick it up. And then if you give the vaccine to 34 million Americans, and only one in 34 million Americans over the age of 70, and only one in 30 die, you've got a million Americans dead over the age of 70. Now, let me take you back. America, the authorities admit that they collect fewer than 1% of vaccine injuries. In other words, if 1,000 people are killed or seriously injured by vaccines in America, the authorities admit that they only pick up 10, one in 100. And the manufacturers said there's a 50-fold underreporting, because doctors aren't encouraged to report or talk about vaccine problems, and anyone who does speak out about vaccine problems is likely to find themselves in serious trouble. Now, the same thing is true in the UK and anywhere else. It's between 1% and maximum 10% of vaccine problems get reported. Doctors and regulators don't tell people the truth. Doctors don't tell the regulators because they're frightened. Now, I've got another paper that I found, and this explains, I believe, a lot of what's going on. It's a three-year-old paper. I hope the fact-checkers don't mean that it should be thrown away. It's 3 years old. Danish government and a Danish vaccine maker funded a study of the DTP vaccine. Diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis being whooping cough. Now, Gates and his pet organisation, the World Health Organization, claim that the DTP vaccine saves millions of lives, and they've been spreading it all over the world. But this study in Denmark found very differently. They looked at 30 years of data, 30 years of data, and concluded that the DTP vaccine was probably killing more children than died from diphtheria, pertussis and tetanus prior to the vaccine's introduction, because the vaccine had ruined the immune systems of children, rendering them susceptible to death from all sorts of diseases, pneumonia, dysentery, malaria, bilharzia, leukemia. None of those diseases is officially recognized as a vaccine injury.
Wow.
But they are vaccine injuries because the immune systems of the children were destroyed by the vaccines. Now, you look at all that, and incidentally, it does puzzle me why Black Lives Matter protesters spend all their time worrying about statues and never looking at what's happening in Africa with vaccines which are being promoted by these people. Now, Gates, we all know Bill Gates and his foundation, he admits he has two plans. One is to vaccinate the world, and the other one is to reduce the world's population. Right? Vaccinate everybody, reduce the world population.
Now, he does say, Gates says that if you by giving people vaccines in countries where birth rates were high because of bad sanitation and because of early infant mortality. He says by giving people vaccines, they'll be less inclined to have children. That's what he says. He says, I'm not saying that by giving them vaccines, you'll kill them and therefore you'll reduce the world's population. Right? That's what he says.
It doesn't. But the people who've looked into this that I've seen have said, what a load of baloney that is. Because they're actually having the same number of babies as they did before because it's cultural.
Right.
So giving them the vaccines they don't generally suddenly say, oh, both of us
have less babies
for their lives, so we must stop now. Because in a lot of these countries, there isn't any contraception anyway. But that's another thing. But it's something that people should be looking at, as they should be looking at the fact that the lockdowns have resulted in millions and millions. The United Nations was talking of millions. And it's strange to be quoting them. But the United Nations is talking of vast numbers of millions of children who are going to die of starvation and die of a lack of any sort of food and treatment and so on, water, because the lockdowns have completely destroyed these countries. But nobody's looking at that. Nobody cares about that. The BBC doesn't care about that. The BBC supported the European Union, a Nazi-created organization, which gave people money to grow tobacco for years, and whose common agricultural policy led to mass starvation in Africa. That's the BBC for you. They supported the EU for years. Anyway, the point about the Danish government is that, is it possible that Gates's two ambitions are linked by this? You give this vaccine and then all these children die. Is that just an amazing coincidence? Could it be something useful? What's going on? What is going on? Don't forget, the majority of illnesses, deaths caused by vaccines go unreported.
That's right.
And yet, at the moment, we're seeing hundreds of deaths, tens of thousands of adverse events with COVID-19 vaccines, and even the WHO admits that the vaccines won't stop you getting it and won't stop you passing it on. The one thing that the early research did seem to show was that the vaccines might mean that you got slightly less severe symptoms if you had the vaccine. But that's one hell of a risk to take, looking at all the deaths and serious problems. And yet anybody who says that in public is branded, banned by YouTube, Facebook and the BBC, and branded a conspiracy theorist. Everything that I've said this evening has been absolutely true and absolutely certified in medical journals that are very reputable. I'm not going to risk a reputation. My reputation was crashed the first day by Wikipedia, who changed a Wikipedia that had been there for 20 years and turned me into some sort of strange. I'd much better off having one of those Nazi Wikipedias.
We could do a whole show on that, because as Wikipedia has basically replaced the Encyclopedia Britannica and other encyclopedias, it is a absolute outrage, and it should be major news. This should be a huge discussion. How can people who despise, or not despise, but how can the enemies of somebody like Dr. Vernon Coleman, say, who do not like that he's exposed the things they do in the past, how can it be that they can access his Wikipedia page and change it to call him names and to suggest that he's a conspiracy theorist? It's beyond the pale, this, and it's going on all the time.
They took down all the, I haven't seen it for months, but they took down all the books I'd written, all the fact that, the 25 languages, all the books, all the television programs I'd presented, all the government policies I'd changed, all the radio, everything. They took down everything. And I just became a conspiracy theorist because I had suggested that the coronavirus was being exaggerated. I had disagreed with Neil Ferguson, who is treated like some sort of wonder guy, even though everything he said for the last 20 seems to be so completely wrong. He did one forecast that was 199 million out. I mean, if you handed in your sums and you got 199 million out, you wouldn't be very popular with the teachers. But the
Vernon, do you know? Can I just come back in before I give you the final word? You are the only prolific best-selling author that I know of that Wikipedia has basically deleted your bibliography. Anybody else who's written and had novels published and successfully published in foreign languages and all of that, like yourself, their bibliography is accessible through their Wikipedia page. Yours has been deleted. Gone. You've just said as much.
I think they may have taken down that one of my novels was filmed, and I think the film probably disappeared too, because I don't know whether the film's still on Wikipedia, but certainly the book that relates to the film wasn't on Wikipedia. All my books were taken down. Now, and Larry Sanger, the co-founder of Wikipedia, has disowned it. He wrote an amazing book pointing out, there were paragraphs in his book in which the Wikipedia and CIA appeared in the same paragraph, and I'm not surprised. The things that we have to do now, I talked a lot about terrible things that have been happening and the evidence which shows all these awful things that are occurring. And I do think what's happening with the other thing that I've just forgotten, just remembered, is that there was a paper during the first lockdown. I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again. There was a paper in the first lockdown, and a number of doctors noticed that the infant mortality in the UK had fallen. And they said, why on earth could this be? Why is it? Is it because people aren't going to the pub? Is it because people are watching more television? Is it because people are drinking more alcohol? Or is it possibly because the little infants haven't been having their vaccinations? And the conclusion they came to was, well, maybe we ought to look at the vaccinations, because it could well be that it's the vaccinations that's been killing all these kids. That will never be investigated. Three things I would, just the same as they will never do the trial that I said at the beginning on this programme they should do, which is to compare 20,000 people who have the vaccine, compare the mortality and morbidity rates with 20,000 people who don't have the vaccine.
You've been calling for that for years, not just for coronavirus vaccines. You've been calling for years that you look at babies that have had vaccines and you look at babies who haven't had, and you look at them at various stages through their lives. For years you've been saying that.
I have, and nobody ever does it. And what would it cost? It would cost nothing.
Nothing.
The government's spending, I can't remember what it was, 7 million or something to do some stupid trial to see whether they can give different vaccines, which the companies say you can't, but the government wants to do it because, I don't know why, kill more people. Yeah. And the coal. But they're spending 7 million on that. 7 million would more than cover the trial I've suggested, because it's dead easy to do. You just get the names of 20,000 people who've had the vaccine, and the names of 20,000 people who haven't, and after a year, you look to see how many of each group are still alive and how many of each group are dead, how many of each group are lying crippled in bed, and how many of each group are still wandering around trying to get in the shops because they haven't had the vaccine and aren't allowed to eat. There are things that people can do. Look at a list of vaccine deaths and injuries on your website and my website, and send it to everybody you know so that people understand how dangerous these things are. 2.5 to 3% was the last survey I saw. Get people who work in nursing homes or care homes, they should speak out about the deaths. If your nursing home or care home didn't have a death, and this is true of loads of care homes around the world, if your care home didn't have a death during the whole of 2020, and then the vaccines came in, and then you had 12 deaths, look what happened in Gibraltar.
Reported, yeah.
Hardly any deaths at all in 2020. They did a huge vaccination program, and people were dying like flies. And the government says, just a coincidence.
Just a coincidence. We're going to leave it there for today. I've got to do this, because I get hammered if I don't have the show to 2 hours on the money when it goes out on the repeats, 10 o'clock and so on. A lot of people get it on the website as it's repeated on a loop over and over and over again. VernonColeman.com, folks. BrandNewTube.com for an old man in a chair. Check it out. All the episodes are there. Do buy his books. He's written about the pharmaceutical industry for years. Best-selling books, right? Check them out now. Do watch, if you can. I'm going to watch it, even though Vernon understandably won't watch it. Watch the BBC try to destroy people like Dolores Cahill on Panorama tonight at 7:35 p.m. UK time. Thanks again for your time, Vernon. You have no idea how important it is that we do this every Monday or every second Monday or whenever you can do it. I greatly appreciate it. Thanks for coming back on.
My pleasure, Richie.
Legend. Dr. Vernon Coleman, live on the Richie Allen Show for Monday, the 15th of February, 2021. Thanks to him. That's it for us. We're out of here. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time for the next episode of the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. Nothing like it. Do check out the Panorama BBC if you can. It's inevitably going to be a stitch-up. I know. I've been there. Done that and worn the bloody T-shirt. I don't mean I've stitched anybody up, but it's been done to me. This program repeating right soon on a loop overnight. It'll be on Podomatic.com, Spotify, iTunes, and whoever provides you with your podcast. Look after yourselves and one another from the BBG. Good night.